An amazing thing has happened today. It is not raining. Yeah. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael Kroos. I am the chief geek in charge, and I have been getting lots of email about one little subject that I should share with you now. I've shared this with you before, but I need to do it again, I guess. And one of them came from a guy who sells fertilizer. And he was questioning something I said. And I said to myself, how long has this guy been selling fertilizer? I don't know. Anyway, I have talked about in the past the importance of buying a good quality fertilizer and having micronutrients included as part of your fertilizer package. So, in other words, when you look at a bag of fertilizer, there are three numbers. Those are the macronutrients. That is your nitrogen, your phosphorus, and your potassium. All of that is lined up right there, okay? And those are the three biggies. The nitrogen, of course, makes things grow. The phosphorus helps with root development. The potassium builds an overall strength. Those are all very important. But I think, and I just kind of think, that minor elements are also very important depending upon what you're growing, okay? Say you're just growing turf grass. You probably, other than perhaps some iron, you don't need minor elements. And maybe you don't need the iron depending upon which turf grass it is. If it is something, you know, like Argentine Bahia grass or buffalo grass, yes, you're going to need the iron because that becomes chlorotic. It turns a little yellow on you. So you will need the iron, but probably not a lot of the others. You won't need the molybdenum and the zinc and all of this other stuff that comes with it. Now, I have a friend named Stan who thinks that fertilizer should have four macronutrients. And his thoughts, and you know what, I kind of agree with him on a lot of this, is that calcium should be the fourth number. There should be four numbers in fertilizer. You know, your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium, and then the calcium. Because Stan has always thought, and I can't disagree with him, that calcium is a very important nutrient. Although it is categorized as a minor element or a micronutrient, it's pretty important, especially if you're growing stuff that you eat. Anything that you eat, calcium just makes it taste better. And you'd be surprised how many people will fertilize their garden. They will fertilize their garden and just use the three majors with no calcium. It happens a lot. And, you know, you're going to get okay-tasting vegetables. I'm not going to say they're not going to taste good. They're not going to be okay. But if you add that calcium to it, you're going to get a spike. You're going to get, oh, man, just more vibrant taste. Much, much, much more vibrant taste. Which brings us back, and I don't want to go off on this right now, comparing organics to chemical fertilizers. Maybe I'll talk about that later if I have time in this segment. But getting back to minor elements are very important. Minor elements include, right now, that what Stan and I refer to as a major element, but that calcium, very important. And then there's iron, there's zinc, there's copper, there's boron, there's molybdenum, all kinds of things like that are in the minor elements. And what do these do to plants? Well, they do all kinds of magical things to plants in trace amounts. You don't need a lot of them. They're just like people. We need minerals. We need minor elements ourselves. As a matter of fact, I just started taking a minor element supplement that I've taken before. And now I kind of wish I hadn't bought it because I found out that, I'll tell you which one I'm using. And I've used it before. And I have nothing but high praise for it. Even though it's a multi-level marketing thing, and I don't like multi-level marketing, and it costs way too much because it's a multi-level marketing type thing. But I use the it's by the Dead Doctors Don't Lie company. I forget the name of it, and I don't have it here in the studio. But it is called Beyond Tangy Tangerine. And they kind of make you think it's like Tang. It's a powder, and you take this little scoop, and you put it in water, and it's going to taste free. It tastes terrible. I'm just going to be honest. It doesn't taste good at all. It doesn't taste horrible, But it isn't. But I got to tell you, I've always gotten results with it. A little over 5 years ago, when I came back from, you know, major surgery and almost dying and all of that, that product, actually, in my humble opinion, and I have no scientific basis for this, and don't think that would work for you, but I'm just telling you, for me, that brought me back to health. Just dumping that product into my system on a daily basis brought me back to health. It's about $60 for a month's supply, so it's kind of pricey. And I just found out from a good friend of mine that you can go to the vitamin store, and there's another one, and I don't have the name of it in the studio with me. But when I run low on this, I'm going to go check it out. And it's supposed to have just about the exact same thing for about $21. So I'm going to look at that, and I'll let you know what that is. As far as your plants are concerned, getting back to the minor elements of your plants, there used to be a product that I used to buy all the time. It was called Minor L. It's not made anymore. The guy who made it actually went to work for Scotts. Good guy, and a really good product. But there are other minor element products on the market. I was at Home Depot the other day, saw about three or four of them. Most of them are regional. I don't think any of them are national. I think Scotts has one that is national. It is, even though the guy that used to make Minor L works for Scotts, the Scotts product is not near as good as the original Minor L, but a good product nonetheless. I think that, you know, minor elements in plants, let me tell you the difference that it makes in ornamental plants. For instance, say you've got anything that is variegated pitus porum, crotons, anything like that. Believe it or not, even spathiphylliums that get that little white bloom, when you add minor elements to the mix, when you're feeding those plants, what you see, especially in the variegated things, is vibrance in the color. Big, big, big vibrance in the color. In the spathiphyllium, the greenness of that, you know, that long stem that comes up, it changes dramatically. You just notice a difference, and the bloom itself actually has more vibrance to it. Vibrance seems to be a fun word for me lately, and I don't know why. But anyway, that's why minor elements are important to ornamental plants. Now, talking about things that we eat. Absolutely. The successful hydroponic growers are successful because they know what nutrition to give the plant, and it always includes minor elements. And most of the commercial people who do this keep that very, very secret. There was a favorite farm of mine that used to be in Tampa. It's not there anymore. It was called Urban Oasis Farm, which was a wonderful local couple. They had 1 acre, and it was all set in hydroponics, and I got to tell you, wonderful people, just salt-of-the-earth people, and very popular following. They did not go out of business because they went out of business. They went out of business because of some major health problem that I still don't know exactly what it is, but they sold the property. But I will tell you that they had this big idea at one point to go totally 100% organic. And they went totally 100% organic, and their big following stopped coming because the food tasted terrible. So they said, okay, we're going to go 100% organic on our pest control, but we're going to start using the chemical fertilizers again to where we have control of the nutrition that gets in there. And I will tell you that they had a minor element package that was second to none. And all of their food that they grew just had this marvelous, rich taste to it. It was rich in calcium. You know, they added calcium nitrate, things like that. But they also had a wonderful combination, just the right amount of iron, just the right amount of boron. And they were mixing this all up themselves. They were creating this micronutrient situation all by themselves. It was nothing that they bought. It was something that they created. And it made them wildly successful because you just couldn't get food like that. So again, minor elements and fertilizer. When you go out and you buy fertilizer for your garden, when you go out and you buy fertilizer for your shrubbery or your trees, especially palms, especially, you know, fruit trees, you want that minor element situation. You want lots of minerals, just like, you know, you need to take minerals. I'm taking minerals now, and I have to tell you, I just started it again, and already I'm feeling better. Already I'm feeling better from the influx of minerals that I'm getting from the product that I'm taking. So it's just very, very good for me. It's good for the plants. It's good for you. And that's exactly what I would suggest that you do, is look for fertilizers. When you go out and you buy some fertilizer for your fruit tree, for instance, you look for, it's called a statement of secondary nutrients. Right underneath those three big numbers, you'll find statement of secondary nutrients. Look at that. And when you see that, you know you're doing well. You're listening to Ask the Garden Geek. Hello, welcome to summer. Yeah, as I'm recording this, it is on Thursday, the day before the weekend starts, and it is officially the first day of summer. It is officially also the longest day of the year. It is the day that my daughter is probably over at her mother's house right now, putting eggs to see if they stand up, because, you know, then somersaultus, you know, eggs stand. I never tried. She always tried that. I don't think she was ever successful at it, but she swore that it would work and that it would happen. And, you know, I don't know. But it's the longest day of summer. And I enjoy long summer days, although it has been stinkingly hot where I live. I mean, just, but here's the other thing. And this is depressing for moi. We've been having lots of rain. And yesterday, I could not do my Wednesday mow. Yeah, I'm one of these people that mow the lawn twice a week. I do all the heavy stuff on Saturdays. And then on Wednesdays, all I do is do a mow and blow. I just mow and I just essentially use the lawnmower to blow anything that's on the sidewalk or on the street in back into the grass. Nothing, you know, terrible, but I just do that. And I could not do that yesterday because it was stinking raining. I mean, so I'm out looking at my grass today. My next door neighbor, who's 89 years old, maybe he's 90 now. He's been 89 for a long time. Anyway, he comes out and he goes, "Michael, our grass has grown a lot. You know, we just mowed on Monday. They mowed on Monday. I mowed on Saturday. And, you know, our grass has grown." He says, "And your grass has actually grown more than mine. Why is that?" I wasn't going to tell him my secrets. And he goes, "Oh, and your grass is greener than mine. And I've got, blah, blah," you know, the unnamed company that comes out and treats his yard. I'm not naming the company. "And, but your lawn's greener." Well, I wasn't going to tell him. But he could watch. He could see that I put, you know, a bunch of milorganite on my front yard. Not the backyard, but the front yard. I just piled down milorganite like crazy. And yes, the grass is darker green. It's noticeably better, but it is growing. It, you know, I mowed 2 days before he did, and you know, my grass is taller than his, and it's just well, and I guess it should be, but I mean, it's taller than his, and he's, you know, and it's too tall. But I didn't mow today because it's Thursday and I got other things to do on Thursdays. And I can't mow tomorrow because I'm teaching a class tomorrow in the afternoon and into the evening. So it's going to be the Saturday mow again. It's going back to the, and it's going to be a harder mow because the grass is taller and thicker and I'm just going to be taxing my equipment and doing all of these things. So it is what we do. It is how we get things done. Plus, I've been challenged with my radio equipment. I am actually recording the show, not on my A1 Plus equipment. I am doing this with the Plan B equipment, which, by the way, I think it sounds just fine. And I think it actually sounds wonderful. Instead of my big expensive microphone and my mixer, I'm using a USB microphone, an Audio-Technica ATR2100, as a matter of fact, which plugs directly into the USB port of my computer, which then drives it right into Adobe Audition software, audio editing software. Thus, I create greatness with that. And the only difference between that is I normally am going with a rather expensive microphone into a mixer that has not only a mixer, but down below it, it has a compressor, an audio compressor that makes me sound even better, or, you know, at least I try to think it does. And, and then it goes from there, it works its way into the computer and into the audio software. I've bypassed those two steps, and I can't use my really good microphone because it has to go into a mixer. I have to use this microphone. But I'm going to tell you something. I think this microphone just sounds fine. And I'll be teaching a class in podcasting tomorrow afternoon, and I'm taking this microphone with me just to show people, to demonstrate it. Now, I have a studio. The Tampa Bay Technology Center has a studio. They have a studio that has the same microphone that I have here, same audio software. They've got a really good mixer. And, you know, so we can do it first class there, but I'm going to show them how they can do a podcast, how they can do a podcast with this. You know, this is about a $65 microphone and a USB, and there's free software available for audio editing, and I'm going to use that free software tomorrow and show them how to do all of this. Oh, well, enough about that, and enough about my lawn. Now I need to talk about my trees, because we've been having all of this rain, I have all of my trees trimmed back to where they're nowhere near my house, so branches cannot fall. I have a neighbor right around the corner who does not have that, and all of the rain caused a rather large branch to fall on his roof and do some, I'm not going to say severe damage, but some damage nonetheless. And I was not here when that happened. But my neighbors told me they could hear it on my street, and it actually happened on the next street, but they could hear it when this thing fell down on the house during the rain. And I saw the aftermath of it, and, you know, it is, I just can't say enough about why trees do not need to be next to houses. And I'm sitting here with three trees next to my house, but I've spent, you know, and the city won't let me take them down. And, you know, but I have them trimmed back. There is absolutely nothing hanging over my yard. There is absolutely nothing hanging over my house. And the one tree was hanging over my next door neighbor's house. And I paid to have that removed, although I was told that I was not responsible for doing that. But, you know, my next door neighbor is a good guy, not Al, the older guy, but another younger guy who lives on the other side of me, a really good guy. And so I just felt as though that branch did not need to be hanging over it. So I paid to have it removed. So I have things trimmed back. So if you are going to have trees, you have to be responsible like I am. And get them off your house, because they are going to cause you damage. And I'm going to tell you, the leaves wreak havoc on your roof. They wear your roof out. I think I added at least 8 years to my roof by getting the trees off of the top of my roof, you know, as far as branches and leaves falling down. Because I used to have to go, I didn't go up there. I'd send Zach up there with the blower, and he used to have to go up there all the time with the blower just to blow all of the junk off the roof from the trees, because it would sit up there, it would get wet, and it would just, you know, it was not good for the shingles. And since I paid the money to have everything removed that's hanging over the house over, we haven't had to go up there once to do any of that. It's been rather wonderful. Yet my next door neighbor has trees over his house, and he's up there every week with the blower getting it down, and he just can't afford it. You know, he's got four trees hanging over his house, plus, you know, my one that was partially, you know, that was also hanging over his house. I got rid of that, but he's got four trees that are hanging over his house, and he can't afford to have them trimmed back, because we're talking thousands of dollars. So he's up there looking at it, blowing the stuff off the roof, and trying his best. You're listening to Ask the Garden Geek. Whenever I get 5 emails on one subject, I know I need to talk about it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael Kroos. I'm the chief geek in charge right here, right now. And we're going to talk about diatomaceous earth. What? Diatomaceous earth. Or I've had people over the years say, I want some of that diatomaceous earth. It's diatomaceous earth. And we're going to talk about that now. I've talked about it for years. I got to the point where I got tired of talking about it. But I'm not. We're going to chat about it. I never knew what it was. Well, here I kind of did, but I didn't. Let me tell you my history with diatomaceous earth. And this goes back to 1965 when we moved to this beautiful town in the west coast of Florida. And I was a young, person in junior high school, and we had a swimming pool installed. And our filter was called a DE filter. And I said, what's that mean? And Elmo Gelini, the guy who built our house, who was there, he said, I've got to show you what this is. DE stands for diatomaceous earth. And I said, okay. He goes, and we use it as a filtering medium in this filter. And this is what you have to do. You have to flush out the filter once a week, make all that DE that's in there. You have to hose it off, blow it all out of there. And then you start up the pump and you add more DE to it till it lines the side. And then that works as a filtering and it makes the water crystal clear. So that's what I knew about diatomaceous earth for years. You know, we had a bag of it out in the garage, and every week I had to go out there and take a scoop of it and, clean out the filter, stick it in there, and, that was it. Until many years later, when we got rid of that filter, died, and we replaced everything, and we went with a filter that wasn't a diatomaceous earth filter. It was just a regular filter. Much easier to deal with, I swear. The next time I found out about diatomaceous earth was when I was in Germany in 1981, had my son at a hospital over there. Long story. But anyway, he was 10 months old. And we stayed at the hospital. We stayed at the nurse's dorm across from the hospital in this beautiful little town. And there was a bunch of us Americans there, as a matter of fact. And we all got invited to breakfast down in the cafeteria. So I go down in the cafeteria and I just wanted a bowl of cornflakes. And they had cornflakes. I said, that's good. That's like home. So I poured my bowl of cornflakes and I added my milk. And then I saw the people, the nurses and the people that worked there. There was this powder. And it said, it's a weird looking sugar. And they were taking just the tip of their teaspoons, just the tip, and sprinkling it on their cereal. And then they were eating it. And me being the ugly American, I said, I want a bunch. I take a heaping teaspoon of that and dump it all over my cereal, and it tasted awful. I said, what in the heck is this? What? And then I find out, one of the nurses is kind of laughing at me. She became a friend. And she said, it's diatomaceous earth, and we eat it as an internal cleanser, in the morning, just the tip of it. But, much you're eating, that's bad. And I said, I'm not going to eat anymore. So then I didn't think anything about it at all. Until one time, right after this radio show started, back in the 80s, I get these letters coming in the mail. We didn't have email back in those days. So I would get letters coming to me from the network saying, when are you going to do a show about all natural diatomaceous earth for pest control and soil preservation? And I said, what's this? And then I would get calls on the show, and they were phony calls. I'm smart enough to figure this out. The lady calls up, when are you going to do a show about diatomaceous earth as a natural pesticide and soil conditioner? And I said, I don't know anything about it, but finally I got this letter. There's a guy and his name is Frank, and I forget his last name, and he's in Northern California. He is the world famous expert on diatomaceous earth, and he actually has a diatomaceous earth mine. I said, well, all right. So I call the guy up. And, he says, who are you? And I said, who I am. You guys set this up. He goes, yeah, we kind of did. I said, okay, that was a brilliant job. Good for you. Now tell me about diatomaceous earth. He goes, I'm going to send you some. I said, okay. He said, I'm going to send you all kinds of information about it. I said, okay. So about, I'd called him on a Monday and Friday, this big box with 20 pounds of diatomaceous earth, and they were in rocks. It was like actually rocks of diatomaceous earth comes with a big, thick thing of information about it. And of course, I started reading through it, and I find out that diatomaceous earth is made up of diatoms that existed in the water millions of years ago. And these are the fossilized remains of the diatoms. And when you pull it out in its natural state, it has little tiny jagged edges all around it. And people use it as a filtering thing, and other people were using it as an internal cleanser. People were giving it to their cattle, and people were using it as a natural pesticide. Now, as a filter, I found out later, before they make it available for filtering, they heat it to 2,000 degrees and crush it, gets rid of all the jagged edges, and actually increases the amount of crystalline silica that is in it. You don't want to mess with that stuff, so stay away from the swimming pool diatomaceous earth or the filtering diatomaceous earth. Bad stuff. So anyway, and it all looked really, really good. And I said, so I called him up. I said, listen, this is Friday. The show is Saturday. Why don't you come on and do the show with me? He says, all right. Had him on. He was great. He was, at the time, he was 69 years old and he was retired. But he and his wife owned a diatomaceous earth mine north of Redding, California, about 40 miles north of Redding, California. And he's, you know, that's where the stuff that he sent me came from. I said, oh, well, that's wonderful. And he talks all about it. And then he says, you know, I said, well, what if someone wants to buy some from me? So I'll sell him a 10-pound box. And I forget what the price was. It was $29.95 plus $10 shipping. So it came to $39.95. And I had to give his post office box out for orders, so people could order it. And I said, oh, that's good. You know, that's nice. So I did that. And this is Saturday. He calls the network on Wednesday, and he says, you got to have Michael call me. You got to have Michael call me. So I get a call from the network. This was before cell phones. They call me at my office in Tarpon Springs, and they said, this Frank guy wants you to call. He says it's an emergency. I said, okay. So I call him up. I said, Frank, what's going on? He said, what can you do to make sure nobody sends in for any more diatomaceous earth? I said, why? He said, I've got like 80 orders. I said, well, that's great. You know, $39 times 80. William, where's my calculator? He goes, no, you don't understand. He said, I thought I'd get like 10 orders. He said, I drive a 15-year-old Volvo. My wife and I have to drive up to the mine, which is 40 miles north of where we live. We're old. He said, we have to dig this stuff out of the ground, put it in boxes, in plastic bags, in boxes, and then take it to the UPS place to ship it. And he says, we can't get this done. He said, so his son, who is a surgeon in San Diego, California, I mean, the opposite end of the state, southernmost tip of California, had, and his wife had to drive up to the northernmost tip of California. And here's this surgeon out there with shovels, and they rented a big U-Haul truck to fulfill the orders. So I had to come back on the show. I said, please do not order anymore. Frank can't handle it. You know, he's getting the rest of the orders out. It's taking him a little time, but he can't handle it anymore. And so I said, so please don't do that. Well, then people were bugging me about it, you know, just bugging me and bugging me and bugging me about it. So I sat down, and the first thing I did is I called Frank. I said, I would love to sell this, but I don't own a diatomaceous earth mine. He says, no, but there is a company, this, you know, they're called Eagle Pitcher. And I'm going to give you the guy's phone number. They're a big, he says, they have it. You want something called MN36 from them. It's the same stuff that I have. It's actually a little fluffier and better. And he said, see if you can order that. And I said, ugh. So I called the guy, and he was just as nice as could be. And he tells me there's a place right where I live that has it. He says, they've got a pallet of it. It's been sitting there forever. You can go get it. So I said, you know, well, gosh, I said to the then Mrs. Gross, I said, then Mrs. Gross, we should sell this stuff. So we decided we were going to sell 10-pound boxes of it, like Frank did, at $29.95 plus shipping. And so, you know, we came back that week and started doing that. And it just sold like, you know, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. I swear, you know, that's how we got into the mail order business. And we didn't know what in the hell we were doing. But we figured it out and got it done. But in the midst of this, I took all of Frank's material and I wrote a newsletter. And the network, and I said, back then there wasn't an internet. And I said to everybody on the radio show, if you would like a newsletter that tells you everything about it, send a self-addressed postage, you know, with envelope to this address. We sent out over 30,000 of these things. Well, now, with modern technology, That newsletter is available for you on the internet for free. And if you want it, all you have to do is go to get this naturalpesticides.blogspot.com. That's naturalpesticides.blogspot.com. Carrying over from the last segment on Ask the Garden Geek, where we were talking about diatomaceous earth, I, you know, wanted to give you more information if I could. Answer to first question that's going to come into your mind, is Michael still selling diatomaceous earth? And the answer is no. No, 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 no. Stopped it many, many years ago. Back in those days when... Back in those days, when we did this sort of thing, it was quasi-legal, as it turns out, because in those days, the Environmental Protection Agency did not like natural controls. They did not like natural pest controls. So when we sold it, we could not say that it did anything. And we had people from the Department of Agriculture showing up at my house, and you know, finally, I just said, ugh. Well, now it is, you know, easily available. I'm going to tell you where to get it. Not by me, because the regulations have changed. Now they have a new class of pesticides called generally regarded as safe. And one of those things that's part of that that you can say controls pest is all natural diatomaceous earth. And the best all-natural diatomaceous earth that you can buy just about anywhere, and, you know, back when I was talking about it back then, the reason we sold so much of it is because you couldn't get it anywhere. You absolutely could not get it anywhere. And we were selling it. And we were boxing this stuff up. Oh, the then Mrs. Crose, who was my, by the way, the second Mrs. Crose and my favorite of all three of the Mrs. Croses, and still one of my best friends. She was here all afternoon with me. As a matter of fact, she lives a mile away. But anyway, she got so sick of packaging diatomaceous earth, I could tell you stories. But right now, you get the safer brand. It comes in bags, I think 10 pounds or 5 pound bags. A 5 pound bag goes a long, long, long way. And once again, if you would like that report that I wrote on all natural diatomaceous earth, you don't have to send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. And by the way, it was, you know, pretty, it was 4 pages. Back when we wrote it, and there was a young lady at the Sun Radio Network downstairs that they had assigned. All she did was grab those. The things would just come in. The network printed the things up for me at no charge, but they put their advertising on it. You know, but this young lady, all she did was take the newsletters, fold them up, stick them in these envelopes and send them out. And like I say, they sent out more than 30,000 of them. It may be a lot more than 30,000, but I, you know, last I heard about it, it was 30,000, but they were still coming in every day. You can get it now for free without doing anything by going on that internet machine and going. And I stuck this up years ago. I don't even know when I stuck this thing up, but it's been years ago, but the whole thing is right there. And it is, what is it? naturalpesticides.blogspot.com. It's one of those free blogging websites that you can do. But it's naturalpesticides.blogspot.com. And I go into the whole thing. The whole thing is there. You know, and it tells you, you know, DE's many uses. Let's see what else. DE tip number one, add it to your potting soil. Diatomaceous earth is natural pest control, tells you how to control roaches, tells you how to use it in the house, to take the switch plates off your electrical thing and use a little duster, you know, that you could puff it into there. tells you how to do fire ant control with it, tells you how to do snails, tree borers. I had great success using DE as a tree borer. Bagworms tells you how to do that, aphids on vegetables, on fleas. I never recommended it as a flea control because, and all of that. So it's all there. You can just get it for free. Naturalpesticides.blogspot.com is the website that you can go to and just get all of that information. And it's there. And, take a look at it. And, tell me what you think. A couple of things. I don't recommend diatomaceous earth as much as I used to. And let me tell you why. I use diatomaceous earth now, but I use it sparingly and in certain situations. Like, to give you an example, where my son Zach used to go to preschool, and Zach is now 24 years old, so this has been a while, they had a fire ant situation. They had a big sandbox, and when I say big sandbox, it was about 2,000 square feet sandbox, and the kids play, and there was three rather large fire ant mounds on the side of it, and they wanted me to come kill it. And I said, well, I'm not going to use a pesticide on this. So I then I took a stick and I, rattled up the fire ant mound, and fire ants were just coming out like crazy. And I did this on a Friday after at closing time. And I sprinkled this stuff all over. I just put it in a little shaker, and I sprinkled it all over it. So the ants were pouring out of there, and they were coming in contact with the diatomaceous earth. The diatomaceous earth kills them by breaking down the waxy coating on their ectoskeleton, and they essentially dehydrate and die. And I have to tell you, I came back early. Well, I went back Sunday late in the day when they weren't open, and I had a key to the gate to get in because I said, I want to look at this before kids start coming back. And I wasn't expecting a full control. And these were big mounds. I mean, big, big mounds. And I came back, and they were all dead. And I took a shovel, and I dug down in there to see if any more were anywhere. They were, and they didn't move. I mean, they all died. It was 100% successful. And by the way, if the kids got in there and rolled around in the diatomaceous earth, it wasn't going to hurt them. It was totally natural. They could roll around in it if they wanted to. It was fine. So I didn't want to use a pesticide. That was an excellent example of how I could take care of that. So that worked very, very well. Another situation that I used it is on tomatoes. And they had tomato earworms, and these people were very chemically sensitive. And I suggested, and I just brought over a shaker, and we just put a little bit out, and I gave it to the lady. And she would just go out and put a little bit out in that area. Now, here's my, and then I used it for tree borers. And the way I use it for tree borers is I would make a little a slurry with it. I would take soap, dishwashing soap, and pour diatomaceous earth into it, stir it all up and make it into a paste, and I would climb up the trees and with a putty knife and jam it into the holes. Worked every time. It was wonderful. So, good stuff. Read about it. I hope you enjoy it. You're listening to Ask the Garden Geek.